show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you've read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey there, and welcome to the Guy James Show here on this August 1st. Here we start the month of August. Where does the time go? Coming to you live from the beautiful Southwest Florida area, the beautiful sandy beaches and blue waters of beautiful Fort Myers and Naples area, Florida. Of course, all across the country and all around the world. And I want to thank every single one of you for being with us today. Fully realizing that in the summertime, as you well have noticed, I'm sure, many of the media folks take their vacations in the summer because they know ratings are down a little bit. Audience is always down a bit in the summertime. People are outside. I don't blame them. That's where I would be right now if I wasn't here doing this show. Be outside in the pool, swimming, walking, doing this, that, and the other thing. But, alas, we have to be in the studio today. And so I hope everyone will join us and stay with us for a couple of hours. We hope to have a good show for you today. We've got a guest coming up at the bottom of the hour, Brandon Friedman. Brandon is a senior advisor to VoteVets.org. You've seen his writings all over the place at Daily Coast and all around. You've seen him on TV, and he'll be here to talk with us about the war. He's a veteran of the war in Afghanistan and Iraq, so he'll be with us. We'll have a thing or two to say about the Wall Street Journal issue with Mr. Murdoch buying it now. Oh, boy. And, of course, how well things are going in Iraq. We all know that since the New York Times article that came out on Sunday that things are peachy keen in Iraq. And everything's going to be fine. Everybody's going to live happily ever after. We all know that. And, of course, we've got issues taking place in Congress. Congress about to adjourn for practically the entire month of August. Got to go home and rest up after such a trying and difficult time they have in Washington, you know. Yes, they work so hard. Go to work for about, 2.5-3 days a week, and then head home on the weekends to wherever they're from, most of them. Very few of them spend the time in Washington. Imagine the travel bill the taxpayers pay every year for these people to drive to fly back and forth to their homes. My, oh my, oh my. It's got to be enormous. Somebody figure that up and let me know what it is. Find out how far each one of them flies and what their airline ticket would be for all 435 congressmen. I'm assuming a few of them would be able to drive, and from Northern Virginia and Maryland and West Virginia and so forth would be able to drive. Of course, they probably turn in expense vouchers for that as well. But then you've got the likes of the Stevens flying to Alaska, and, I'd love to know how much jet fuel is consumed each year by our Congress critters flying back and forth home on the weekend. Like to know. So when one of you gets that all figured out, let me know, and we'll figure out how much it costs, and, send them a bill or something. I'm not terribly happy right now, like most of you, and I'm sure you hear it in my voice each and every day. I'm a bit weary, like most of you. I'm sure I'm terribly frustrated right now. I regarding the impeachment issue, and you hear me talk a lot about it. I don't, and I want to make this clear. From all the email I get and all this, it's not a gotcha thing. It's none of that. I don't advocate impeachment because of the Republicans' treatment of Bill Clinton. First of all, let's get that straight. I don't. I don't want impeachment because I hate George Bush. I don't know the guy. I hate what he stands for, but I don't know him well enough to hate him personally. I don't want impeachment because of my political ideology. Really. I want impeachment in order to make things right again, and I cannot understand the reticence of the Democrats to go after these people and go after them hard right now. Not for the sake of the Democratic Party. Throw the politics out the window. I don't give a damn about that. But for the sake of the Constitution of the United States. We've heard Bush say 1,000 times, and you think about this, you've heard him say it. We've heard Bush say, I don't know how many times, how he took an oath to protect the people of the United States. He did no such thing. He did not raise his hand and say, preserve, protect, and defend the people of the United States. He did not say that. He took an oath to protect the Constitution of the United States. The Constitution will protect the people. That's why it was written, to protect the people. And as anyone can plainly see, Junior Bush and his administration have trampled all over the Constitution, therefore doing just the opposite of protecting the people of this nation, the very thing that he likes to crow about. And this is as clear a case of the good guy going against the bad guy as you'll ever see in any of the old-time cowboy movies. You remember that. Well, if you're my age, you do. The old black hat and the white hat guys. The Bush administration guys are all wearing the black hats, and the Democrats have the chance to put on the big old white hats and ride into town and save the people. But they appear... They don't just appear. They are afraid of the gunfight that would ensue. The Democrats are so damn scared of the media that they can't seem to move on this. And they've been demonized by the media for nearly 30 years, and they're frozen with fear. Think about all of the crap the media lets the Republicans get away with. Think about it for a moment. Should the Republicans still be able to use the... what I call the faith card? Should they be able to use that anymore because of openly harboring so many liars and thieves and sexual misconduct in their party? Should they be able to use that faith card in front of the evangelicals? Stop and think about it. Their hypocrisy on moral issues is absolutely stunning. And one of the big things they always talk about, they can't play the tax card anymore. Tax and spend Democrats, tax and spend liberals, because this Republican Party has caused the people of this country to pay more in direct or indirect taxes than ever before. Unless, of course, they're filthy rich, in which case they've been well taken care of by this Republican administration. They bought themselves the best Congress that money can buy. And, of course, you hear all of our Joe Lunch, Pay Old Lunch Bucket, Sally and Joe Americans that I'm always talking about, middle class. You heard so many of them say they vote Republican. And on the tax issue, they remember that $300 that they got back with. You know, that $300 is long time ago disappeared down the gas tanks, along with thousands of dollars more. And if you'll remember, when they ran for office, Junior Bush bragged about how he and Cheney had connections with the powers that be in the Middle East, and how good it was going to be to have an MBA as President of the United States. Oh, yes, they've managed things fiscally very well, have they not? And They can't claim, much to the chagrin of Grover Norquist and his people, they can't claim to be the party that'll keep government out of our lives anymore, because under their care, the government has massive powers of intrusion that can affect every citizen's privacy and rights. You, me, everybody. In short, the Republicans don't stand for anything today that they stood for just a few decades ago. So some of you folks are running around calling yourselves Republicans when you don't really know what the Republican Party stands for, if all you know is what the Bush Party stands for. And, you know, in my opinion, and for my money, impeachment is not for anything other than getting a start on cleaning out the filth from Washington, D.C. And yes, I know it goes deeper than the White House. Yes, I know there's plenty of filth and corruption to be found in the House and the Senate as well. We see evidence of it every single day. When we see some of the payoffs that have taken place, But we have to start somewhere. And it seems to me that instead of starting from the bottom and working our way up, we should start at the top. Because after all, when you go out and you dust your house, you don't start at the bottom and keep spreading dust all over the places you go. You start at the top, and the whole thing gets cleaner as you make your way down to the floor. I mean, it's probably a lousy analogy, but I'm sure you get what I mean there. And also, keep in mind that the House and Senate members are not sitting around trying to think of ways to get rid of Bush. They're waiting, they're wanting to keep him in office to further poison the political waters for the Republicans so that the Democrats can take over Congress completely. And I don't disagree that having the Democrats take over Congress for a while wouldn't be a good idea. It would. But our Congress critters need to understand that they need to get busy and do our bidding. They need to understand that they're there to work for us instead of only being interested in their nonstop merry-go-round of re-election fundraising activities that they get started on the moment after they take their hand down from being, you know, taking the oath. And lest the media think that impeachment is just some idea coming from what they like to call the kook fringe of the party, and you hear that all the time. Just you let this get started, this whole impeachment thing, and I believe you'll see a groundswell of support from the American people like you've not seen in a very long time. Democrats of all stripes and persuasions will support it. You know they will. Mark my word, once it gets started, it'd be fully supported by almost the entire left and people on the right as well. That's what it took when the balls finally started rolling against Nixon. A whole bunch of them walked down to the White House and told Nixon what was what. They knew the jig was up. The fact is that this just might be the last chance that we have to save our constitutional republic. Our representative democracy is in peril. You know it is. You can feel it. You see evidence of it every single day. Bush and Cheney cannot be allowed to go scot-free without any attempt to hold them responsible to the people of the United States for their crimes. And we know there have been many for their mismanagement, and there's been plenty. And their simple malfeasance while they've been in office. In a way, this gang has had its roots clear back with the Nixon administration. A lot of them served in the Nixon administration. Rummy and Cheney. And, you know, it's an administration that was allowed to get away with many, many crimes and never actually held accountable. And so many of them have returned to the scene of their crimes, confident that they can repeat them over and over and over again without ever being held accountable. Ask Scooter Libby. It's time to throw them out once and for all and show those in power both now and in the future that this will not be tolerated by the American people. Show them that this is the people's country. If the impeachment does not happen, I'll tell you who the fault will lie with. It will lie with the people of this country, not with the congressmen and the senators. It will be the fault of the people who didn't raise enough hell to make life miserable for the Congress, both Democrats and Republicans, every single day, to knock on their doors, ring on their bells, as the old signs, the song says, fax, email, whatever, phone calls. If enough of that is done, we can change the course of this country if only enough people will take an interest in what is happening to us right now. The apathy by the American public on some of these issues is appalling. We've got one of the gravest concerns of our time going on right now over in Iraq. And much of the American public, while they, you know, if you talk to them, they'll say, oh yeah, I don't like it. What are they doing about it? Nothing. Billions of dollars being squandered. Not billions. Now we're approaching a trillion, they say it's going to cost. And that's by far the secondary matter in it. The lives of our military personnel that have been lost. The lives of the innocent Iraqis that have been lost. This is the gravest concern of our time, and yet a great majority of the American people act like they just don't give a damn. Why, oh why? Why has it come to this? Why do we not stand up as citizens of this country and take responsibility? Personal responsibility for the actions of our government, each and every one of us? Why is that not being done? I don't know. I don't understand. I really don't understand. I don't think I ever will. People email me all the time, and people I talk to on the phone, friends I talk to, why do you get so upset about this? There's nothing you can do about it, guy. We're all in the same boat. There's nothing we can do about it. Yes, there is. I swear to God, I think the Vietnam War would still be going on today in one fashion or another. We'd still have troops over there if it weren't for the people that got out and protested, the hundreds of thousands of people that went out and hit the streets during that time. And even then, I wonder sometimes about the motivation of those people. Was it the draft? I suspect some of it was that. Hell no, I won't go. People were afraid of their lives. Young people in those days, young men especially, thought every single day about, oh my God, am I going to get drafted? Am I going to go to Vietnam and get killed? The ones today don't think that. I don't want to bring back the draft. Because ultimately, just like taxes, the rich always find a way around it, and if you don't think that's true, you do a little Google and find out what the champagne company or champagne group or whatever it was Bush belonged to in the National Guard down in Texas, find out who comprised that organization. The rich boys who didn't have to go. They always find a way. They find a way not to pay the taxes. They find a way not to go to the military. So I'm not so sure a draft is any way to even things up, despite what Charlie Rangel says. Look who's over there now. It's an all-volunteer army. A lot of the kids that are in that war right now had to volunteer, they felt. Had to find a way to make a living, and the military was the best way for them to do it. Some of them went and joined right after 9/11. They had the best of intentions. They trusted George W. Bush. They thought he really meant it when he said we were going to have a war on terror and we were going to go out and we were going to protect the people of the United States and fight them over there so we didn't have to fight them here. They really believed him. And many of us wanted to believe him. But it didn't take very long to understand that it was all built on a pack of lies. And it didn't take very long to understand that Cheney lied, Bush lied, the whole pack of them lied. And they can blame that on the CIA and faulty intelligence all they want to, and we know damn well, we've talked to enough of the CIA people, we know that the intelligence was manipulated to be just what they wanted it to be. It was a home-cooked meal for them. Indeed. They ordered it up, and they got what they ordered. Well, it's a sorry situation, and I know I hear from so many of you that are frustrated as I am. And it's an ugly situation. It isn't going away anytime soon. And we're going to talk about it a lot today. We'll talk about the war. Also want to take a few minutes today and talk about the liberal media in a little while. And what about that ethics bill that they're passing? What does it mean? The truth is, it most likely means nothing at all. In the way of actually curbing the greed and the corruption that goes on between the lobbyists and the members of Congress. It won't mean a damn thing. Come on. Don't doubt for a moment that those who voted to pass this piece of useless legislation have already figured out a way to bypass its new rules. No gifts or free meals or tickets for the congressmen and women? Yeah, right. They're going to willingly give up their ill-gotten perks? Do I sound a little bit cynical? I should, because I am cynical when I hear that Congress is actually saying they're going to do something to curb corruption amongst their own ranks. And if you think I'm blowing smoke here, do remember the McCain-Feingold campaign finance bill. It's laying in a smoldering heap right now in Washington. It's useless with no teeth, and it's laughed at by those gathering money for a campaign. So it's the same thing. Same thing. We're going to pause for a quick break now. We'll be right back.
Petey, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us only sky. Imagine all. It isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for. And no religion, too. Imagine all the people living. You
You may say I'm a dreamer too. I love that song. I love that song for the words and the lyrics. I love the music in it as well. But can you imagine, and I often do, can you imagine what this country, what this world would be like if only the good rose to leadership position? Can you imagine what this country would really be like if only those who had the interest of the people in mind held the positions of power in this country, if we were smart enough to elect only those people, if conditions were right for those people to run without getting smeared and their lives ruined? Can you imagine what this country would be like? Can you imagine what this world could be like? Yes, I know. I'm imagining too much, aren't I? But one can dream. I do wonder sometimes what percentage of people went to the Congress of the United States with nothing but good intentions and the best of intentions in mind, and soon thereafter were corrupted and compromised. I wonder what the percentage actually is. I've known a few people, not very many, but a handful of them personally. And they seem like good and decent people, but there's something about when the money and power gets flashed in front of them, it glazes over their eyes, and they think about other things. And it's just such a shame. It really is. Ah, yes, I suppose the Limbaughs of the world would listen to what I just said. that's a lefty for you, all right. Well, yes, it is. That's exactly what I consider myself, and that's exactly what I think we on the left stand for. As I've said many times, we want a world of we instead of a world of me. And I mean that with all my heart and soul. So if the people on the right want to make fun of that, go ahead. I'm well grounded in my intent when I say that. I know I am. And I know that millions and millions of Americans feel the same way I do. Just why don't we do enough about it? That's what I'd like to know. Well, we're going to take a quick break right now and get hold of our guest for today, Brandon Friedman. And so we'll make this break rather brief and be back again very, very shortly.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good
guys lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor and the rich get rich. That's how it goes. And everybody knows. Everybody knows the boat is leaking. Everybody knows the captain lied. Everybody got this broken feeling. Like their father or their dog just died. Everybody talking into their pockets. Everybody wants a box of chocolates and a long stem rose. Everybody knows.
Yes, indeed. Everybody knows that's how it goes. Welcome back to the Guy James Show. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. We appreciate your listenership. And as promised, we have our guest on the line, Brandon Freeman, Senior Advisor to the VoteVets.org. Brandon, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
We have much to talk about and not a lot of time. I wanted to, first of all, ask you... As a guy who's been in Afghanistan and Iraq for quite some time, what, a couple of years altogether?
Pretty much. I went over there in November 2001 and came back from Iraq the end of 2003.
Let me ask you. There's something I don't know. How did you end up going there? Why did you go?
Well, I was assigned to the 101st Airborne Division as an infantry officer. And shortly after 9/11, we found out that we were going to end up going to the Afghanistan theater, and we left in November of 2001. And we stayed in theater for a few months, and then we ended up going to Afghanistan to fight in a battle.
You were awarded a couple of Bronze Stars. But
yes.
I see a comment that was made that you said you never saw any of the combat you expected. You want to explain that to our audience?
Well, it was always a lot more vague. The enemy was never very plain to see. When we were in Operation Anaconda in March of 2002 in Afghanistan, we had mortar duels where we fired mortars. We called in airstrikes. There were sniper exchanges, and I can only remember once or maybe twice of ever actually seeing an enemy with my own eyes on the battlefield. So it wasn't, in that sense, it wasn't what I expected. Another thing that wasn't as expected was, for instance, in Iraq, you know, the way I always pictured battle as being was that, you know, two opposing armies line up and they fight each other. But as everyone knows now in Iraq, it's not like that. Everything is an ambush. You're in city streets. You're mixed in with civilians. You never can tell who's who. And the other thing that I didn't expect was how boring it is most of the time. That's the other thing, is that you expect it to always be action, always be fighting, and that's really not the case. It's I think the old cliche is it's months of boredom followed by moments of sheer terror, which is pretty much what it's like.
Most of the time, boredom. I haven't heard anybody say that. You must be you and everybody else over there that feels that way must be a special breed of cat. I don't think boredom would be something. Maybe if I were there, I'd change my mind. But it seems like I'd be worrying about the next time I'd be heading out. But it would probably drive you crazy if you did that all the time. One of the things I wanted to ask you about today, you've obviously by now read and heard all about and commented upon the New York Times article that was in Sunday, telling us how things are in Iraq. These guys went over and spent a week over there and came back as experts, like many of our politicians do. How do you feel about that article?
Well, I don't think they're correct in saying that things are going better. One of the things that people keep saying at this point, and I think O'Hanlon Pollock may have said, was that third is working. And people are basing this on the fact that casualties are down this month or last month in July. This is kind of a fallacy. This isn't right. Because, first of all, casualties always drop off in July because it's so hot there and insurgents go to ground. The other thing is that this July, 2007, American forces sustained the highest casualty rate of any July since the beginning of the war in Iraq. So by that measurement there, you could say that things were getting worse. You know, every year previously, casualties in July ranged in the 40s and 50s, and this July we had 77 Americans get killed in Iraq. So things are obviously not improving. It's just a matter of we're basically switching the effects of the insurgency. You know, when we up the numbers of troops there, it slows down the killing of civilians, you know, the intersectarian violence, but it ups the casualties in American forces. So if we pull back our American forces, the civilian deaths would go back up. It's just a matter of who's going to take the casualties, but nothing's really changing. And I don't think that those guys can see that. And, you know, you can't go over there for 8 days and come back and have an understanding of what it's really like on the ground in Iraq every day, out on patrols, you know, with the ground forces who are dealing with the people.
Well, I'm sure you're familiar with the term dog and pony show.
I'm very familiar with the term dog and pony show.
Explain to everybody how that goes when they know some
the
big
dog,
big.
The dog and pony show is what a military unit will do to spruce up everything for politicians or VIPs that come to visit the unit. The dog and pony show is where you put everything together and everybody looks nice and you show them displays and graphics of all the wonderful things you're doing and how everything is just going swimmingly. And you don't let them see the bad side of anything. Part of the dog and pony show often is that soldiers are handpicked to meet with certain politicians. And a lot of times these politicians are actually not even allowed to go off on their own by the Department of Defense to get the real story. So the dog and pony show is really when politicians or VIPs show up and they're not able to get the real story from the men and women who are on the ground dealing with Iraqis day in and day out.
What's the motivation to keep the real story from being told? Is it political? Is it just a CYA thing? What's the real motivation?
Yeah, it's kind of a CIA. I mean, I don't want to say that, but it's the military doesn't want to look bad in the face of policymakers. They want to look like they're doing their job, and they want to look professional. So as part of that, they want to show how well they're doing. And, you know, while in some ways this is understandable, I think long-term it comes back to hurt the military because the people who need to be making the decisions, or the people who are making the decisions, need to have all the information they can get. They need to know when things are bad. You know, they don't need to just be told how great things are. They need to be told the full story. And I think there's some pressure to not give that full story sometimes.
Well, and that's the hard part for me to understand, and many of our listeners and people all across the country, is the truth always comes out about that. They can postpone the bad news all they want to, but sooner or later, it does make it back home.
Right. This is what's happening with the Pat Tillman stuff going on this week.
Mm.
You can't, when that stuff happens, it's best to just come out with it and just say, look, this is what happens. This is bad. And it's unfortunate that it happens, but it happens in every war. And you just can't try to hide that stuff because it always makes you look worse in the end.
Well, it's an ugly, ugly story. And since the truth did not come out right away, it's probably leading people to think things that maybe didn't happen. But now that they know they were lied to, people are thinking the worst in that. What, do you have an opinion of what happened there?
Well, you know, it's hard for me to know exactly what happened there. I don't think anybody knows except for the people on the ground. But what this does is it causes a break in trust between members of the military and their families and the government that's supposed to provide for them. You know, how can you tell a parent that they should have their son or daughter enlist when that parent thinks that they may not get the whole story if their son or daughter dies? There's no trust there, and without that trust, you know, you don't have a professional, effective military. And so I think it's reprehensible that this was handled the way it was handled by the Pentagon and the government.
Let's go back to when you first were sent over to Afghanistan. How did you feel about it at the time? Were you on a mission? Were you into the mode of fight them over there so we don't have to fight them here? How did you feel about it?
Oh, yeah, I mean, at that point, sort of, we went over there shortly after 9/11 to guard an airfield in Pakistan, and we stayed there for actually 4 months, and we did rescue recovery type operations out of the airfield, you know, into Afghanistan. But we didn't really get into any action until March of 2002 when we participated in Operation Anaconda, and that was a big one over there. But the way I felt about it at the time was that it was necessary. I think most people felt like that was a necessary war and something needed to be done, you know, because that's a pretty bad place, eastern Afghanistan and western Pakistan.
Have we done enough there?
Oh, no. We probably should have sent 100,000 troops into Afghanistan after 9/11, and we should have kept them there until the problem was solved. And we should not have left. We should not have diverted our resources to Iraq because that has done nothing but cause us trouble, and it was for no reason, we know now.
That has to be very disappointing and demoralizing to the guys that went and did their job in Afghanistan to know that the administration was never serious about finishing the job there before moving on to someplace else. You felt like you were on a mission, and it was a just mission, and it was just all of a sudden seemingly abandoned. And that's the way it looks anyway.
Right. We went on this wild goose chase. It turned into a fool's errand in Iraq. And now we're at risk of losing not only Iraq, but we're at risk of losing Afghanistan and even Pakistan at this point because we've so destabilized the area.
And,
because we haven't had enough troops in there in Afghanistan from the beginning, and so now it's, you know, we chased all these guys into Pakistan, and so now they're fomenting discord in Pakistan.
And apparently we're not going to go after them the way it looks. There's certainly a problem there with Musharraf and the tribes.
There are all kinds of political considerations that would make it very difficult for us to go into Pakistan. But even if there were no political considerations as far as going into Pakistan, we still wouldn't have the troops available. Almost 90% of our military is involved with Iraq. They're either in Iraq, they've just returned from Iraq and they're recovering, or they're preparing to go to Iraq. Iraq has sucked up all the resources and manpower in the military, and it's left us vulnerable in all other areas. And it's really become a national security issue, this Iraq situation.
And yet we're talking about, more than talking, seriously considering, from what we hear, even an excursion against Iran.
Well, I mean, to me, that's absurd. I know that there's serious talk of it, but as far as the military is concerned, I'm not quite certain what they would be thinking. I don't know how the administration would intend to do that. I mean, you could bomb, you could send missiles over there, but there's really no way that we could mount a ground operation against Iran right now.
Well, I know that you're involved with the group VoteVets.org, and you're in a position to know the answer to my question as far as morale. When you went to Afghanistan and you were doing the mission you were sent there to do, you and your group, what's the difference in the morale then and the morale now that you know of on the ground in Iraq and Afghanistan?
Well, when we went to Afghanistan, I don't think anybody was upset about going. I think everybody understood the mission, and there were really very few substantive complaints about what we were doing there. In Iraq, on the other hand, you have captains leaving the army at extraordinary rates. You're having trouble with recruiting. People are getting mobilized off individual ready reserve because they can't get enough people. People are getting remobilized to be recruiters now. It's really a bad situation, and especially when you've lowered the army standards. People can now enlist at the age of 42. They're taking convicted, you can get waivers if you have a felony in your background. They lowered the standards so they can get people, and that's how they're maintaining their numbers. And this is not the professional way in which we operated as a military when I joined in the late 90s. And so it's very demoralizing, and I get emails all the time as far as work goes and through the book I've written. I get emails from people all the time over there, and it's really depressing. You know, these people, their trust and professionalism is abused by the government by sending them over there for 15-month deployments repeatedly, and then that people have trouble getting medical care on active duty. They have trouble with the VA. It's become a bad situation, and I think it's devastated morale, and to the point where it's going to become a national security issue if it's not already.
I'm wondering the recent defeat of the bill to give the soldiers as much time at home as they're out on a tour. I wonder what effect that had on our military personnel.
Well, it doesn't have a good effect, I'll tell you that. The way that the military ideally wants to do it is where a troop would have twice as long at home as he or she was deployed. So if you were gone for a year, you'd have 2 years at home. Well, with the current op tempo, that's impossible. So at the very minimum, what Senator Webb put forth in his bill was that troops would have at least as long at home as they were deployed. So if you were gone for 15 months, you'd have 15 months at home. And Republicans in the Senate blocked it. And to me, that's incredible that they would block that, that they would be willing to send troops over there for 15 months and give them less time than that at home before sending them back another 15 months. I talked to a female sergeant on a plane a couple of weeks ago who was going to miss her second Christmas in a row with her 3 or 4 year old son. And she couldn't explain to him why she'd come home for 2 weeks. She saw her son for 2 weeks in 15 months.
Wow.
And that, to me, that's crazy. You can't operate a professional military at this rate. It's just not going to work.
And yet
these people need at least as long at home as they are deployed.
Well, I should think so. And I was hoping they would do something. It was a great idea by Webb, and yet we saw him lectured by the likes of Lindsey Graham, who put it in Webb's face that, oh, I've been to Iraq 7 times. Well, he obviously got the dog and pony show 7 times.
He got the dog and pony show, and he's a lawyer in the Air Force Reserve, and he's never deployed to a combat zone.
Speaking to a mine who had been in battle and who has a son that was in battle.
Right. Senator Webb's son is in Iraq, and Senator Webb himself was in the Marines in Vietnam, and he's being lectured to by Senator Graham, who's got no combat experience, has never spent time in a combat zone, and wants to lecture him about how he's been to Iraq, and that's That's insane.
Well, that's typical of this support the troops rhetoric we've had. Your book, tell us a little bit about your book. It's coming out in August, right?
Right. It's available online right now on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and they're shipping them. It'll be in stores here in about 2 weeks. It's called The War I Always Wanted, and I began writing it a couple of years ago after I got out of the Army, and it started off as kind of a cathartic thing for me. But then as I wrote, I got more into it, and I began to kind of want to show how these high-level decisions made by the government, you know, affect individual soldiers and their families, and what the aftermath is like once soldiers go to war. You know, I wanted to kind of humanize the troops that you see on the news. And another part of it was that I wanted to convey how I myself went from being, you know, a younger guy who always wanted to be in the Army, always wanted to be a hero and get the bad guys, and who trusted the government to make the right decisions on how we went to war and when we go to war, and how I turned into a soldier who ended up leaving somewhat disillusioned with absolutely no faith left in the Bush administration to make the correct decisions on when to fight a war, when not to, and how to do it.
It's all about truth, isn't it? You left not necessarily with a bad taste about the military, but with the civilian control of it.
Well, you know, as a soldier, I think we always respect civilian control of the military. That's a very important part of the Constitution. But as part of that, there's kind of an unspoken understanding that the civilian principles in the government are going to show some deference and respect to senior leaders in the military as far as what to do and when to do it militarily on the ground. And this administration has shown that they have no interest in listening to the military. And that was one of the things we did at VoteVets.org, was we had commercials a couple of months ago that we ran with General Batiste, General Eaton, and General Clark. General Batiste, who was a ground commander in Iraq, and General Eaton, who trained the police and military in Iraq. And they basically came out in these commercials a couple of months ago and said that the Bush administration never listened to the military as far as how to do this.
Well, you know, that runs into the serious question right now. And as you know, there are a couple of words that George Bush can't say enough. And one of them is the name Petraeus, and the other one is Al-Qaeda. When he gives a speech, it's a contest to see which one of those he can say the most. Why is it, do you think? I mean, we've had great generals like Batiste. We've had the likes of Tommy Frank. We've had several generals in there that have been in charge and sent to that job by this administration. But now we have General Petraeus, who it seems to me that they've put all their eggs in one basket here. All of a sudden, we have a general, according to the administration, that's going to lead us to the promised land here. That just doesn't make sense to me.
Well, this problem is really large, a lot larger than one man. I'll be the first to say that I worked under General Petraeus when I was in the 101st during the first in 2003 in Iraq, and I'll be the first to admit that he's a very talented officer. He knows insurgencies. He knows diplomacy very well. But this problem is larger than one man. You know, his leadership is very important, but by himself, he's not going to be able to solve this because he's a member of the American military. And there is no American military solution to this problem in Iraq anymore. This is a diplomatic and political problem that needs to be solved both diplomatically and politically. And the sects in Iraq need to reconcile between themselves, and they're not going to be able to do it through pressure from us. It's just not going to work.
Well, it certainly doesn't look like it's working, despite the stories from the New York Times. As we see today, more carnage taking place in Iraq today, with more bombs and more people killed, more soldiers killed. It doesn't seem to be subsiding anytime soon in any meaningful way. Brandon, the book's coming out, is out now online. I wish you all the luck in the world with it. Is there a website where somebody can go and take a look?
Yeah, you can go to www.brandonrfriedman.com, BrandonrFriedman.com, and that'll tell you about the book and how to order it and everything.
Well, I'm grateful to you for writing it, and I think you've put down a lot of truth that people need to know. The more truth we get about this, the better off we'll be. That rather than relying on the government to give us their version of the truth, and there's no one better qualified to give us the truth than gentlemen like yourself. And I want to thank you for your service. I want to thank you for writing a book, and I want to thank you most of all for getting the truth out to the American people. That's something that'll help save our Constitution, if anything will.
I've been glad to do it.
Thank you very much. Brandon Friedman.
Thanks.
Well, there you have another story, another firsthand account of what actually goes on in Iraq and Afghanistan and what actually is going on in our military. Yeah. You can read the New York Times on Sundays if you like, and you can read the accounts of the reporters that go over there and spend their time in the green zone for a few days. You can read the account of the stories that come back from the likes of Lindsey Graham and John McCain and the people that spend their time in the green zone when they go over there. You can listen to all that, and you can hear the candy-coated stories they have to tell, or you can hear from gentlemen like Brandon Friedman that we heard just now, from the gentleman we heard a couple of weeks ago, live from the streets of Baghdad. You can hear the truth, the plain old unvarnished truth, from people who have been there, out in the streets, outside the wire, as they say. Or you can hear the stories they want you to hear, coming from people that go spend their time in the green zone that aren't even allowed to go outside of it. Take your pick. What makes the most sense to you? I know what makes the most sense to my audience. It is a crying shame that the right-wing media trumpets this story off the New York Times on Sunday. A newspaper, by the way, the New York Times, that has been vilified constantly by those on the right, year in and year out. If you'll recall Ann Coulter saying it was too bad they didn't bomb that place as well. But all of a sudden, you have a couple of guys that come back from a little vacation inside the green zone and come back and trumpet the administration's line that they want you to hear, and all is well on right-wing radio. Mr. Limbaugh, Mr. Hannity, Mr. Gallagher, the whole boatload of them. Everything's good in Iraq now. Just listen to those folks. Pay no heed to gentlemen like Brandon R. Friedman, who have been there. That's what they would have you believe. And it's such a damn shame. And we'll talk about the media some more in the next hour. I don't know where this first hour went already. My God, time goes so fast when you're talking to somebody as interesting as Brandon. We're going to talk more about this and the media, the control of the media, and the horrible effect that it is having on this country right now. We've got a great number of people out in the population of this country that believe the moon is made of green cheese just because Rupert Murdoch said so and George Bush said so. And it's time that we start getting the truth from our media folks once again. I think we used to. I don't think they used to be a propaganda arm for the government. Not so much as it is now anyway. Always a certain amount of that that goes on in every time and circumstance. But it's worse now than it's ever been. And the right wing is taking complete advantage of that situation. You know it, and I know it to be true. Well, we're going to pause for news at the top of the hour. We'll be back with another great hour on the Here and the Guy James Show, part of the Head On Radio Network. Once again, we want to thank Billy Shears for being music director and wish him well. And has been down and out here physically for a few days, but he's coming back. So we'll be back. here on The Guy James Show right after the news.
This is the Quality News Network. A military operation is underway to rescue the 21 South Korean church workers from the grip of their Taliban kidnappers. Earlier today, Afghan forces dropped leaflets over the region warning residents of the impending military action. A German engineer captured by the Taliban with another German and five Afghans earlier in July appeared on TV pleading for his life yesterday. His German colleague was executed last week. There was more carnage in Baghdad today as a tanker truck was blown up by a suicide bomber at a gas station, killing at least 50 people waiting for gas. In another section of Baghdad, a parked car bomb killed 17 people. However, things are changing for the better in Iraq since the troop surge began a few months ago. Fed-up civilians are turning against al-Qaeda and Muqtada al-Sadr's Mahdi army. Troop morale is high. Basic services, water, power, sewage treatment, they're all being restored. Shops are coming back to life, and the formerly dangerous Anbar province is now the best part of Iraq. It'll be the largest peacekeeping effort in world history. The United Nations Security Council voted unanimously to send thousands of peacekeepers to Sudan's violence-ridden Darfur region. First of 26,000 additional troops will be deployed later this year. Stop tapping into their home equity to buy cars and trucks. American Home Mortgage is close to insolvency after the companies that lend them money cut off financing, leaving the company unable to fund close to $1 billion in loans that it promised to make. However, there is fantastic news in the housing market. The June numbers are in. They show an overall 5% jump in home sales. Out west, the increase is the strongest with a gain of 8.6%, while the eastern United States had a 3.1% rise in June sales. Right now, the market is doing much better than yesterday. The Dow is back up 31 points at 13,242. The NASDAQ is off 6, and the S&P 500 is down a fraction. Oil is down $1.26 after getting up near $78 a barrel. It's now down at $76.95 a barrel. Gold is trading at $677. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Michael.
Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back, everybody, and thank you for staying with us through the news. I hope you went out and got yourself a cold drink and maybe a little PB&J sandwich that tied you over till dinner time. I don't know. Kind of been watching my waistline myself, so haven't been doing much of that lately. I do love PB&J, though. Always did. Always did since the time I was a little kid. But, anyway, it's got to be grape jelly, though. Oh, yeah. I mean, I'll go for strawberry, but it's got to be grape, most of all. Some people eat like blackberry jelly and peanut butter, and it's just not right. It's got to be grape. Everybody knows that. Am I weird or what? You wouldn't believe my eating habits. Oh, you would not. I'm probably one of the pickiest eaters you've ever seen in your life. Why am I talking about this? Don't eat any fish or fowl of any kind. Don't eat broccoli, asparagus, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, anything weird like that. Just a plain old meat and taters, brown food type guy. But I do love Italian. I do love Chinese. And I like Mexican quite a bit. Well, I like a lot of kind of food, but kind of been watching the old waistline lately. That's a good idea for all of us, I guess. And so I have to lay off the ice cream. Probably the greatest food that God ever invented. But ice cream and pizza, I guess. I'm not sure. Hard to find good pizza nowadays, though. You know, with all these chain restaurant pizzas and everything, I mean, they're okay. Don't get me wrong. But the old, good old-fashioned Italian pizzeria, brick oven pizza, is just nothing like it, you know? It's like a hamburger. If you want a great hamburger, you don't go to McDonald's. If you want to get full, you go to McDonald's. If you want a hamburger, you go to McDonald's. But if you want a great hamburger, that's not where you go. And it's the same way, in my opinion. If you want a great pizza, you don't go to Domino's. I mean, they have good food. Don't get me wrong. I'm not cutting down Domino's or anything. I'm just saying if you want the really good stuff, you got to go to the little independent place down the street, if you know what I mean. Little neighborhood pizza joint and all that. Oh, it's making me hungry just even talking about that. As promised, I wanted to spend a few minutes talking about the dominance of the liberal media. Yeah. One of the biggest hoaxes ever perpetrated by the Republicans. And Mr. Lee Atwater, before he died, he was the Karl Rove of his day, of the Republican Party. Before he died, he said that liberal media thing was one of the greatest things that he had ever instilled in the minds of the American public. Actually, he said convinced the American public that there was a liberal media bias. And, you know, to the minds of many people, that still exists today. Yes, they actually believe it. And Atwater, as I said before he died, admitted that was a great hoax that he'd pulled off. He had spearheaded that movement, and by golly, he got it done. And there are lots of right-wing zombies today that'll tell you that, oh, the media is dominated by the left. Mm-hmm. Laura Ingraham. A gal that I was just reading, some notes of some things she said a couple of years ago, how that George Bush was one of the greatest, most courageous presidents we'd ever had. Okay, that gives you an idea as to her credibility right now. But Laura Ingraham gets a one-week stint tryout, so to speak, on CNN now. What's that gal's name? Anyway, it's like 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock in the evening. Prime time, I think 8 o'clock. So we've got Laura Ingraham on there now. We've got Glenn Beck. Oh, man. And that makes you wonder, with Glenn Beck, how low do the ratings have to go before they'll get rid of a guy off there? But Glenn Beck and now Ms. Laura, are we getting Fox Light here on CNN? Is CNN whoring themselves to the right in hopes of staying with Fox in the ratings? I don't think a better example of selling out your journalistic ethics, I don't think I've ever seen a better example of it. Good luck with that, CNN. Good luck with it. But the big story is now that the Wall Street Journal and the Dow Jones belong to Rupert Murdoch. Nice, huh? Thing I want to know is, will there be naked pictures of women in the Wall Street Journal now, like he put in the New York Post? Will Neil Cavuto and Roger Ailes be prowling the halls of the Journal's building, cracking the whip on the editorial content when it doesn't conform to their ideals or Rupert's ideals? Supposedly, in this deal, it was supposed to be hands-off of the editorial content, but we shall see. It's not as though the Wall Street Journal wasn't already right-wing enough. This is going to be interesting. And I found an article by Eric Bollard over at Media Matters, and I thought I'd quote a little bit of it to you because it's very profound and very interesting. In a 2003 University of Maryland study, and we've talked about this before, A 2003 University of Maryland study found that Fox News viewers were far more likely to be misinformed about whether Saddam Hussein was linked to al-Qaeda terrorists and whether weapons of mass destruction were found in Iraq immediately following the invasion. So Fox News had totally misinformed their viewers. That we know from the study. We know that. We're not guessing that. We know that. A 2004 Center for Media and Public Affairs study found that during the height of the presidential campaign, just 13% of Fox News panelists' comments about Democratic candidate John Kerry were positive. Just 13% compared with 50% for Bush. And it was during the campaign that Fox News anchor Britt Hume called the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth factually challenged book attacking Kerry a remarkably well-done document. And Britt Hume's own words, a remarkably well-done document. Another point, Fox News pundits mocked Al Gore in 2004 following an anti-war speech he gave, joking that the former vice president, quote, had gone off his lithium again and had, quote, lost his mind. At this year's World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, Murdoch admitted that his company, which includes Fox News, of course, had tried to shape the agenda for the Iraq War. And unaware that her microphone was on between interviews, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice this year announced, "My Fox News guys, I love every one of them." And another point by Eric Bullard. This year, commenting on the troop withdrawal date debate in Congress, Hume, Fox's evening news anchor, stated, "This is why the Democratic Party has had this reputation going back decades of really not being very serious about national defense. It's because they aren't." The guy should be tarred and feathered for saying that. And all of that, says Eric, is the handiwork of Roger Ailes. Now, I don't know how much you know about Roger Ailes, but a more despicable man in the so-called profession of journalism has never existed. He's the guy that's got the keys to the new Fox Business Network. He's more of a partisan than a newsman. And this is, again, from an article by Eric Bullard. Ailes thought nothing of delivering back-channel advice to President Bush following the attacks on 9/11, and like Murdoch, Ailes sees a little distinction between politics and journalism. Ailes also likes to paint his enemies as terrorist sympathizers. He went ballistic in 2004 when former Los Angeles Times editor John Carroll, in a speech at the University of Oregon, labeled Fox News, quote, pseudo-journalism, end quote. Pinning a name-calling response for the Wall Street Journal editorial page, Ailes fired back and said he treated Fox News Channel worse in his newspaper than he treated the terrorist who recently beheaded an American. But, of course, he sees Fox News as more dangerous. And it will be Ailes who has the final say over the new FBN. That's the new Fox Business News channel coming out. And a note to journal editors, Murdoch has already publicly promised that the Fox Business Network will be more business-friendly than its competitors and not leap on every scandal. Ailes agreed, telling the New York Times, "Many times I've seen things on CNBC where they're not as friendly to corporations and profits as they should be." Now, as we all know, CNBC is as kowtows to business as much as you possibly could, and Fox is planning on doing even a better job of that. And, of course, back in 2003, when Cavuto's beloved war in Iraq was still flying high, he hit back hard on the air against a journalism professor who'd been quoted as saying the FNC anchorman had abandoned objectivity for overt nationalism during the war coverage. "So am I slanted and biased?" Cavuto responded. "You bet I am, professor." The story by Eric goes on and on and on. This is not going to do anything but make things worse. You know, when you spend all your time in the echo chamber, it's easy to persuade yourself that you're not only right, but you're right because you're smarter and you see more clearly than everyone else does. And that's the way the right sees it on this. Contradictory information produces Well, it produces mental discomfort, and so it's rejected, it's ignored, or it's rationalized away. And if you're watching an outfit like Fox, in the absence of new information coming into your information system, the connection to reality gets a little more tenuous every single day. And let's face it, the right-wing echo chamber is larger. It's a whole lot more tightly sealed, and as a result, it's almost its own separate entity. And it's in its own orbit, really. It's fascinating to watch in a slightly scary and vaguely nauseating way. But, you know, we've got this new Fox mouthpiece, the Wall Street Journal, and you know, that's the way that propaganda works, is for the propagandist to assert boldly the most blatant lie, the most absurd piece of nonsense, which Fox does on a regular basis, with utter conviction and with confidence, and people in their intended audience response to how something is said, it means more to them than what's said. Whereas those of us who parse what is being said are left just gasping at the audacity of it. It's a tried and true charlatan's method of doing things. I think we know that. But it's just an ugly situation with the Biden. You know, I like the Wall Street Journal, certainly not for its editorial content, because it's decidedly biased and has been all along toward big business and toward the Bush administration and toward any Republican. It's been that way for many, many years. But with Fox buying it, you do have to wonder. You really do. Fox, I equate Fox, anything to do with Fox, part of this conservative media machine, your Bill O'Reilly, your Sean Hannity, your Rush Limbaugh, these are hardly voices for reason and rationality. These people are all carnival barkers on a political midway, selling their cheap, self-righteous, and prepackaged outrage to their credulous followers. And that's why they're popular, because they appeal not to people's capacity for logic, but to their capacity for turning off the brain and running with the mob. It's that mob, it's that pack mentality. And anybody who thinks otherwise just isn't listening to this whole thing. I'm just disappointed over that. I thought the family might hold out, but then when you start offering, what is it, $60, $61 a share for a stock that's trading at, what, $34, $35? Money talks, baby. Money talks. And if you've got money, almost always you can get what you want. Hey, I ran across a thoroughly disgusting, and I do mean disgusting, this made me want to just pound on the desk and throw up. A very disgusting piece of, I said that, didn't I? Disgusting. Piece of audio. And let me just set this up. I took this off of a YouTube video, okay? I stole it. And I just took the audio off of it. And let me set this up for just a moment. This is the audio of a principal, female principal of a Christian school, walking into an assembly of grade school children with a life-size cutout of George W. Bush in her hand. Okay? That's what this is. A life-size cutout of George W. Bush being carried into an assembly of grade school children by the principal or teacher at a Christian school. And this is what she had to say to them. And this literally scares hell out of me.
Okay, we're going to welcome Mr. President now. Well, talk to him. Say, welcome, welcome, President Bush. We're glad you're here. I want ask you to bless him. Speak a blessing to him. Once you do that, reach your hand and speak a blessing to him. Do some warfare over him. Some warfare. He has surrounded himself with spirit-filled people. So pray in the spirit over him. Here he is. He's come to visit us. Yes, Lord. Thank you, Jesus. Tell him, Mr. President.
Mr. President.
One nation under God.
I want to play that for you again, okay? I know I shouldn't do that. That's not how we do things normally. But I want to play this again. And once again, I just got an email that said, what? Okay, let me tell you one more time. This is the principal and or teacher of a Christian school walking into a assembly of grade school children, small grade school children, and she is holding a life-size cutout of George W. Bush. And just in case you didn't believe it the first time, let's listen to it again.
Okay, we're going to welcome Mr. President now. Well, talk to him. Say, welcome, welcome, President Bush. We're glad you're here. I want you to bless him. Speak a blessing to him. Once you do that, reach your hand and speak a blessing to him. Do some warfare over him. Some warfare. He has surrounded himself with spirit-filled people. So pray in the spirit over him. Here he is. He's come to visit us. Yes, Lord. Thank you, Jesus. Tell him, Mr. President.
Mr. President.
One nation under God.
You know, I don't want to make fun of anybody here. That's not my intent of playing that. But as I recall, going to Sunday school when I was a little kid, did not go to a Christian school, of course. There, I don't know that there even were any where I was brought up, but that's something that's come along in the last two or three decades mostly. But as a little kid in Sunday school, I don't ever remember teacher walking in with a life-size cutout of a president and saying, I don't know, do some warfare over the Abadashiko budget, whatever it was she said. Wow. The point I'm trying to make here is you've heard the vilifying of the Muslim extremist. That goes on in this country right now. And there's a concerted effort to vilify Muslims in this country, whether they be extremist or not, let's face it, because they are different than, I guess, what's been accepted in this country as the status quo. Tell me that what you just heard isn't extremist. Tell me it is not. Tell me that what you just heard is in any way normal. And is in any way something that a grade school kid, for God's sake, ought to be having to listen to from an administrator or teacher of their school. Tell me that isn't extreme. You want to talk extremism? That thing we just played, that is extreme. Man. Scares me when I hear stuff like that. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. To be honest, and I should know the answer to this, but I do not. I don't know whether the Cheney interview with Larry King was on last night or whether it's going to be on tonight, but I saw some video from a preview of it. And my favorite guy, you know, D'Artini, said he couldn't recall. Does that sound familiar or not? He couldn't recall whether he dispatched Gonzo and Andy Card to then-Attorney General John Ashcroft's hospital room in 2004 to cajole Ashcroft into signing off on the administration's domestic spying program. He couldn't recall. He said, I'm not saying I wasn't involved. I guess it was on last night, okay. I'm not saying I wasn't involved. I just don't recall sending him there. Had no recollection. If that isn't a fat lie, I don't know what is. Are you telling me that a guy with enough moxie to appoint himself to the vice presidency of the United States, and he did appoint himself, let's not argue about that, we know he did. He got himself appointed to be the president of the vice president of the United States, and he is going to sit there and tell us with a straight face or that smirk on his face that he always has that he does not recall whether he sent the attorney general of the United States to see or the future attorney general, White House counsel, to the bedside of a drugged and incoherent almost attorney general of the United States to try and talk him into something that he didn't want to do. He doesn't remember that? I don't know. That's strange credulity. It does. How can you have any credibility at all left when you'll sit there and tell somebody on national TV that you don't remember that? How can it be? I don't know. Another ugly situation. I'm going to pause for a break, and when we come back, I want to talk briefly about the Pat Tillman situation. That's another really ugly situation that's taken place in this country, and we're going to talk about it a little bit when we come back.
I was recently in Europe, and despite all we've done for them and to them, they don't like us very much. They don't respect us at all. And I want to reply to their scorn in a song, which is the following. I like to say a few words, defense of our country, whose people aren't bad, nor are they mean. Now the leaders we have, while they're the worst that we've had, are hardly the worst this poor world has seen. Let's turn history's pages, shall we? Take the Caesars, for example. While the first few of them, they were sleeping with their sister, stashing little boys in swimming pools and burning down the city. One of them appointed his own horse to be consul of the empire. That's like vice president or something. That's not a very good example right now, is it? But here's one. Spanish Inquisition. That's a good one. Put people in a terrible position. I don't even like to think about it. Well, sometimes I like to think about it. Just a few words. Defense of our country. It's time at the top. Could be coming to an end. But we don't want their love. Respect at this point's pretty...
Somehow we were sent to invade a nation because it was a direct threat to the American people or to the world, or harbored terrorists, or was involved in the September 11th attacks, or received weapons-grade uranium from Niger, or had mobile weapons labs or WMDs or a need to be liberated or we needed to establish a democracy or stop an insurgency or stop a civil war we created that can't be called a civil war, even though it is, something like that. Somehow, America has become a country that projects everything that it is not and condemns everything that it is. Somehow, our elected leaders were subverting international law and humanity by setting up secret prisons around the world, secretly kidnapping people, secretly holding them indefinitely, secretly not charging them with anything, secretly torturing them. Somehow, that overt policy of torture became the fault of a few bad apples in the military. Somehow, back at home, support for the soldiers meant having a 5-year-old kindergartner scribble a picture with crayons and send it overseas, or slapping stickers on cars, or lobbying Congress for an extra pad in a helmet. It's interesting that a soldier, on his 3rd or 4th tour, should care about a drawing from a 5-year-old or a faded sticker on a car as his friends die around him or an extra pad in a helmet as if it will protect him when an IED throws his vehicle 50 feet into the air as his body comes apart and his skin melts to the seat. Somehow, the more soldiers that die, the more legitimate the illegal invasion becomes. Somehow, American leadership, whose only credit is lying to its people and illegally invading a nation, has been allowed to steal the courage, virtue, and honor of his soldiers on the ground. Somehow, those afraid to fight an illegal invasion decades ago are allowed to send soldiers to die for an illegal invasion they started. Somehow faking character, virtue, and strength is tolerated. Somehow profiting from tragedy and horror is tolerated. Somehow the death of tens, if not hundreds, of thousands of people is tolerated. Somehow subversion of the Bill of Rights in the Constitution is tolerated. Somehow suspension of habeas corpus is supposed to keep this country safe. Somehow torture is tolerated. Somehow lying is tolerated. Somehow reason is being discarded for faith, dogma, and nonsense. Somehow American leadership managed to create a more dangerous world. Somehow a narrative is more important than reality. Somehow America became a country that projects everything that it is not and condemns everything that it is. Somehow, the most reasonable, trusted, and respected country in the world has become one of the most irrational, belligerent, feared, and distrusted countries in the world. Somehow, being politically informed, diligent, and skeptical has been replaced by apathy through active ignorance. Somehow the same incompetent, narcissistic, virtuous, vacuous, malicious criminals are still in charge of this country. Somehow this is tolerated. Somehow nobody is accountable for this. In a democracy, the policy of the leaders is the policy of the people. So don't be shocked when our grandkids bury much of this generation as traitors to this nation, to the world, and to humanity. Most likely they will come to know that somehow was nurtured by fear, insecurity, and indifference, leaving the country vulnerable to unchecked, unchallenged parasites. Luckily, this country is still a democracy. People still have a voice. People can still take action. It can start after Pat's birthday. Brother and friend of Pat Tillman, Kevin Tillman. You can't say it any better than that. It cannot be said any better than that. 866-546-5254. Going to pause for a break. Be right back.
There's a hope in the world tonight. There's a cloud of fear and sorrow. There's a hope in the world tonight. Don't let there be a hole in the world tomorrow.
They say that anger is just love disappointed. They say that love is just a state of mind, but all this fighting over who is anointed, oh, how can people be so blind?
There's a hope in the world tonight. There's a cloud of fear and sorrow. There's a
seem like that's the way it is? Doesn't it seem like doesn't it just seem like we're on the wrong track right now? It's kind of sad. It's hard to enjoy a lot of things right now when you think about the carnage that's taking place over in the Middle East and other places in the world. And I know it's the world is no stranger to war, most certainly. Hundreds of millions of people have been killed over the years and wars, needless wars many times, but just kind of leaves you with an empty feeling when you start thinking about the kids that are over there right now fighting in Iraq and being needlessly killed, and the innocent Iraqis that have been needlessly killed, when our time, attention, and money could be diverted to such so many more worthwhile endeavors, most certainly. Let me change the subject for a minute, maybe 2 minutes. I was talking to somebody today that's a smoker. And, you know, they're talking about funding the children's program if it would pass and not get vetoed. Talking about adding another 45 cents to a pack of cigarettes. And my smoker friend said, oh, I don't care. We're being punished enough, you know. And I didn't know. It's been a while since I've checked. And I'm a former smoker, and I want you to know I'm not one of those, the ones that runs around ranting and raving about smoking. I do not. I quit smoking, I don't know, 10, 11 years ago, something like that. And I was one of these crazy smokers. I didn't really take smoking up seriously until I was like in my 30s. So don't ask me. Don't ask me. They don't come any, smokers don't come any dumber than that. But, and so I'm not one of these radical ones that goes around campaigning and, you know, chastising people who smoke. Once in a while, if it's somebody I love a lot, why I'll say, gosh, I wish you'd give that up or something. But I don't harp on it. I don't, and they know that. Yeah, if it's something that I'm going to harp on, you wouldn't want to be in my company, because when I harp, I I don't mess around. I really don't. But 45 cents for a pack of cigarettes, extra tax, they tell me that's going to take cigarettes up to nearly $50 a carton. And we were talking about, you know, if there's a couple of people in a family and they're big smokers, you can spend $500-$600 a month on cigarettes. You could own a hell of a nice car. You go out and buy a new Mercedes for that, or, you know, you can own a decent house for that. There's a lot you can do, and I'm not lecturing smokers. I'm really not. I'm just talking about, where people's money goes, and I can blow money with the best of them, I can. But anyway, my smoker friend brought up, since they're going to add another 45 cents onto a pack of cigarette with tax, said, hey, you guys, the rest of you that don't smoke, you better be damn happy about us smokers, because if we quit and nobody smokes anymore, think of all that tax money that's going to be gone. It's going to cost all of you a lot of money. We're more patriotic than you are. And, you know, I never thought of it that way. I found that really humorous. I really did. That if all the smokers quit smoking, all of a sudden, where would all that tax money come from? You're right. But then again, you can weigh the health issue on one side and say, well, it would save our health system a lot of money. But then again, money that's saved by our health care system really doesn't benefit you or I, does it? It benefits the insurance companies. So if all the smokers quit smoking, the rest of us are going to have to make up the tax money somehow. So I guess the thing is, if you know a smoker, tell them to smoke more. I don't know. I don't really mean that. You know I don't. But it's there's always a funny way to look at most everything, and I found that kind of interesting. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to call the program today. It's my job to expose idiots in the Bush administration. And I found a clip by one Andrew Natsios. He's a Bush lackey. He had various positions in the Bush administration. And I think he well represents the Bushes and what a lot of them tried to pull when they talked about this war. Listen to this quick clip. And he was on Nightline with Ted Koppel a couple of years ago, okay, actually when the war was getting started.
When you talk about 1.7, you're not suggesting that the rebuilding of Iraq is going to be done for $1.7
billion. Well, in terms of the American taxpayers' contribution, I do. This is it for the U.S. The rest of the rebuilding of Iraq will be done by other countries who have already made pledges, Britain, Germany, Norway, Japan, Canada, and Iraqi oil revenues eventually in several years when it's up and running and there's a new government that's been democratically elected will finish the job with their own revenues. They're going to get in $20 billion a year in oil revenues. But the American part of this will be $1.7 billion. We have no plans for any further on funding for this.
They had had significant success. We'd rounded up Saddam Hussein. I thought there were theories, series of these milestones that would, in fact, undermine the insurgency and make it less than it was at that point. That clearly didn't happen.
Yeah, very clearly that didn't happen, Dick. And for the idiot Natsios, $1.7 billion. Let me see. We're dropping, half a bill every day? Just about half a billion every day, so 3 days worth would cover that $1.7 billion. And they tried to sell that to the American people. And you know what? The thing is, a lot of the American people bought that. Actually bought that. Don't worry, we're going to pay for all of it with Iraq's own oil. And the reconstruction of the country, once we tear it apart, we'll put it back together with Iraqi oil money. Yes, sir. How's that working out for you guys? How is that working out? $1.7 billion. Cheney says the insurgency is in its last throes. How is that working out, boys? I think I know. Tomorrow, and just to give you a heads up on tomorrow, we have guest Frieda Berrigan is going to be with us tomorrow, and you will enjoy listening to her, I'm sure. She'll have a lot to say on a couple of subjects. We'll talk about it tomorrow, but we'll be having her on, I think, at 3:30 tomorrow. I was looking for my notes on that, and I can't find them right now. How nice that I get started in talking about something and don't have my notes right here. But anyway, Frieda Berrigan will be with us tomorrow. She is the senior program associate at the Arms and Security Project in the New America Foundation. And she's going to talk about the stability in Iraq and a nuclear-free Iran and peace in the Middle East and how the way the Bush administration is going about that, that it just is not possible. And you will enjoy hearing from her. Also, during tomorrow's show, I have been hesitant to do this for obvious reasons, but I, damn it, am going to do it tomorrow. I am going to devote a good portion of the show tomorrow, the entire second hour, to this BBC report. And we will play it in its entirety if you have not heard it. I think it's 27 minutes. It's something we normally don't do on this program. And maybe it's not a good idea for anybody to spend that long on somebody else's material on your own show. But I think it's important enough that we do that. The BBC, as you know, has uncovered information and documents concerning the Bush family and other Americans' association with the Nazis during the Second World War. And we're going to talk about it tomorrow. We're going to talk about it in depth. You will hear the BBC report. You will hear how Prescott Bush, grandfather of the President of the United States, was involved with an apparent attempt to try and overthrow the government of the United States of America. A good bit of research is done on this. Quite a few documents have come to light as of late. And there was a group involved in planning and carrying out a coup against the Roosevelt administration because he was not friendly enough to the fat cat business people here in the United States. So we're going to do that tomorrow. I have thought long and hard of whether or not I ought to do it, and I thought, you know, it's one of those things that I believe the story. I believe there's meat to it. I think there's some credibility to it, and so let's talk about it and let's do air this BBC report that some of you have heard, some of you may not have. I'm sure you've read something about it now. But we'll talk about the Bush family association with the Nazis and the Thysons and the people who, in my opinion, were traitors to the government of the United States during the Second World War. And you may say, well, that's not fair. You cannot visit the sins of the father upon the son. Well, I can when it turns out that it seems that the family hasn't changed any in all these years, when the son, the grandson, has committed acts against the country that are devastating, that I think they knew would be devastating, all for the sake of big business and the military-industrial complex. I think it's entirely fair game to talk about the Bush family, and we will tomorrow. So be ready for that. It may offend some of you. It may offend all of you. I don't know. The story in and of itself is offensive, but it's something that needs to be aired, and we will air it tomorrow and let the chips fall where they may. I don't care. It's been kind of a quiet day here in the show. I see we have a good-sized audience today, but maybe our phone's out of order. I don't know. well, you have days like that. We covered a lot of territory today. I want to thank Brandon Freeman for being our guest today and enlightening us even more on the military situation in Iraq now and the truth about the morale of our soldiers and our Marines over there now. I think their morale has been devastated. I think this administration is responsible, and they've tried to pin it on everybody who's against the war. The people against the war have tried to actually aid these military people of ours, and the demoralization of our military and the destruction of our military. The blame for that lies at the feet of the Bush administration and all who supported them in this ill-gotten venture of theirs into the Middle East. Tired of talking about it sometimes. I want to thank everybody for being with us today here on the Guy James Show. We've covered a lot of territory today, and again, we'll cover a lot tomorrow. We hope you'll join us again here on the Guy James Show. Listener-supported program, www.theguyjamesshow.com. Thanks to everybody who has helped out the program. We appreciate it very much. We depend on your support. You're listening to The Guy James Show here in the Head On Radio Network, Billy Shears, music director, and we will be back tomorrow. And don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you tomorrow, guys.